Donald in the kitchen talks about food. Donald in the kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here around our kitchen table once a week to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we gather here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, the center of Iowa, the center of it all. Thank you for joining us today. So, Donna, did you remember to turn your clock back?
Some of them.
Okay. You did show up here on time this morning. So that is, we go through this every year. Nature itself and the world and animals and plants get along just fine with the world going around the sun and its normal space. And we try to tinker with it. So it'll be a little bit before I can kind of get my body back to
I try not to be resentful about this cultural manipulation, but, ugh.
So this is standard time. This is like normal time.
Central Standard Time. Now we are, well, when did we start the change? Sometime in our childhood, I think. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I mean, there was life before we did all this manipulation.
And we must remember, just like our monetary system, it is a human construct. Like I said, the rest of the world goes on just fine.
Right. The sun does its thing regardless of how we do our demarcations.
I hope we all feel better now. Anyway, today we're going to be talking turkey, as time still marches on. We're going to look a little bit ahead to the holidays.
It's not very far ahead,
Donna. It'll be here before you know it, Donna. And turkey, it's an American classic. Even people that don't cook much or do any big things, they kind of get this urge to shove a rather large bird into the oven this time of year. And there's a lot of little tricks. Donna's got some words of wisdom on this subject. So we also have somebody joining us today who knows his way around a turkey. Joining us today is Rob Fox. Welcome to our kitchen table, Rob.
Thank you for having me.
There we go.
Wonderful. Good.
So Rob is a farmer in Tripolia?
Tripola.
Tripola, which is somewhere north, central, east? Give us a geolocation.
We're kind of like the gateway to northeast Iowa. We're just within east of Cedar Falls.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. So Rob is a farmer, an organic farmer. And he also is the pesticide action
Network.
Communications manager, which he claims it means he manages to communicate once in a while. So we often follow their work. They've done a lot of really good clarifications for some of the problems that we have with chemicals in agriculture. But we are here to talk to Rob about turkeys because not this year, but almost every other year he raises a flock of turkeys. So I want to start out just talking about that it is time to think about where you're going to buy your turkey. Okay. Once we get through Halloween, there's this long slide all the way through Thanksgiving. And then around the solstice, everybody has something they celebrate, whether it's Christmas or Kwanzaa or Hanukkah, most traditions have a solstice, the shortest day of the year kind of thing. Then we do New Year's, and then it all kind of culminates, which we do very quietly, but the January 6th is the end of the 12 days of Christmas, or the, in France it's called the Fête du Roi, which is the holiday of the kings because it's when the wise men showed up, and everybody gets a special cake with a little ceramic statuette baked somewhere in the cake that you hope you don't break your tooth on.
Right. The person that breaks their tooth on that small little, which is actually usually a little statue or little figure of the Christ child, the bébé, you hope you don't break your tooth on that. But if you do, or even if you find it in your mouth, you are supposed to host the gathering next year. Ha ha.
Anyway, we are now in that season where it's holidays this and holidays that, and it's time to buy the turkey. So I looked up a few guidelines. This was Food and Wine, of course. Which turkey to buy? It says, do look for a natural or organic frozen turkey, ideal one that was pastured, allowed to roam outside. If you have access to a butcher or a farmer who can sell you a fresh turkey, meaning never frozen, or a heritage breed, historic turkeys raised naturally, the taste will be superior, but the price tag will reflect that. It says don't buy a basted, self-basted, or injected turkey because those birds are usually factory farmed and injected with additives to make them bigger. So here are things you have to know no matter what kind of turkey you buy. 2 pounds per adult and 1 pound for each kid, so you have some leftovers. It does suggest, and I've done this myself, getting 2 smaller birds if you're hosting a big crowd, because if you don't have a second roasting pan, smaller birds can be roasted in a large skillet or a rimmed baking sheet. Do not buy a monster 18 to 20 pounder. And I agree with that because those things are just hard to handle. And it says, in addition to thawing faster and cooking more consistently, smaller birds are also less likely to be pumped with chemicals.
Good.
So, we're going to talk about, of course, Food and Wine offers all these national places to mail order your turkey and stuff like that. But we have plenty of turkeys in Iowa. So, Rob, tell us what the turkey market was like for you.
Yeah, sure. I think one of the things that people don't always understand when you have a local grower is, and especially if we're doing growing on pasture. And that was one of the things that was key to us, is the birds had access to the outdoors. They had access to a pasture area so they could run around. And part of that means that I'm going to have limits on how many birds I can raise if I don't have a very large piece of property to have them running on. So it's pretty common for a smaller grower like ourselves to feel like a flock of maybe 75 birds. That was typically our maximum, was 75 turkeys in one season.
A lot of turkeys.
Yeah, it's a lot of turkeys.
They're not small. They're not chickens, right?
They are definitely not chickens. And they're actually more interactive than chickens in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Both Tammy and I tend to like them more than the chickens.
Oh, really? Oh, good.
They have more personality.
They do. They definitely bond with you. I mean, okay, I once grew a turkey. I just thought I had a small flock of chickens in California, so I thought that the poultry feed store had baby turkeys, so I bought one. And they were the big bronze kind. And I got a male because I wanted to see the tail and the whole thing. That fellow got so big that he just about knocked me over one time. So we sent him to the petting zoo. But we, in California, we had regular incursions of coyotes. And the turkey, when the coyotes would come, the chickens, some of them would run and hide under the turkey because the turkey would flap his wings and the coyotes just would, they were scared. They ran away. This guy was so incredible. And he followed me around in the yard. Chickens don't do that. But the turkeys they're very personable. I don't know how 75 would be, but...
Oh, well, 75 might be a little imposing when they all come running when they see you. That can be a bit overwhelming if you're not used to
it. Yeah, they are.
Yeah. But if you're used to it and they know you, the fun thing about turkeys and a lot of poultry, they actually are capable of recognizing different people that they
yes.
see on a regular basis.
You can have a relationship with your turkey.
Yeah, you have a relationship with your turkeys. But you know, part of the things that happen with that, of course, is if I'm selling and I'm a local grower, I am not a grocery store, and I'm not somebody who has necessarily a big batch of freezers. And anytime you want your turkey, I just pull one out and say, "Here you go." there are often things that consumers probably need to consider meeting us partway so that it can actually be a successful transaction between ourselves, a small farm, and the consumer. And some of those halfway things might include having limitations on when you can actually get your turkey. One of the constraints that we often have is finding slots to get the turkeys processed. And the closer you get to Thanksgiving, harder it is to find a place to get them processed.
Well, where did you have to take your turkeys for processing? I mean, we're a little short on poultry processing in Iowa.
We are. The good news is there has been some movement to alleviate that, but we're still a little bit tight on processing mm-hmm. in the state. We take ours to Martzon Farm in Greene, Iowa, and that requires, for us, that's a trip of 45 minutes just to get there, mm-hmm. a 45-minute drive. And when we had 75 birds, that meant we had a space to transport them that could only do like 38 at a time.
Mm.
So that meant we would take two trips. We'd load it up once.
All right, I'm trying to get a visualization. How did you get 38 birds? What, in the back of a pickup? What did you do?
Well, you actually did use the back of a pickup. And the fun thing about turkeys is once it gets dark and they're in their roost, they go to sleep. And that's when they're a little bit more mellow. And so what we end up doing is we get a light out where the truck is, and we put a ramp up into the back of the truck. And then we wake them up enough to start, you know, walking them out towards the truck, and when they see the light, they go towards the light.
Oh, and so I was imagining you trying to wrap your arms around each turkey and individually carrying them into the truck, but okay.
Well, we have done that in the past. That was what you have to realize is that when you raise turkeys, there isn't a school of turkey raising that you go to. So you try to find people who've done it before, you ask a few questions. But a lot of it's just learned by doing. And early on, one of the things we did is we thought, well, they're asleep. We knew we wanted them to be asleep because there's no way I want to chase them around in the middle of the day when they're wide awake. And we're doing pasture raised, so they are used to running. So I'm not going to run around after them.
And they're fairly big and fairly strong.
They are, well, they're strong because they use their muscles, unlike mm-hmm. a lot of the turkeys that you get in confinement where they're not moving. They use their muscles, so they're strong, which means you're going to get a better quality meat out of them. So there's that plug for that. But part of it is we did used to walk up behind them when they're on a roost, and we'd give them a big hug. Or we would grab them by the legs and turn them upside down and carry them out. But some of those birds would weigh anywhere in the neighborhood unprocessed to 45 to 50 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to be ready to go. And occasionally they would flap as you got them, and they would hit you in the face. And that's a pretty quick way to get a concussion if you're not watching yourself. So we kind of like what we ended up figuring out. It's like put up the ramp, put some things on the side so they don't go off the ramp, put a light in there, encourage them to walk themselves right on in. We make sure we spread straw on the bottom so it looks a little more inviting than a metal truck, you know. And then we turn off the light, close the truck up, and we drive and deliver them, unload them, and come back and get the second load.
I like the symbolism of walking toward the light. I think that's great, Rob. That's good. You mentioned they are free range, but do they get locked up at night? Do they have a turkey house to live in at night, or what?
That's a really good question. When people say free range and they're talking about poultry, they can mean anything, as you probably know, from what's known as a chicken tractor, where you basically have a cage that you pull that around a pasture each day, but the chickens never go outside of that building. We do what's called day ranging. So what we do is we have a pasture that's accessible to a building nearby. And during the day, we open the door and they go barreling out because they want to be outside. That's where their food is. That's where their water is. We sometimes will move the fences so we can have some rotational grazing, move them around to different pasture areas. And then at night, typically birds will go back to where they woke up. So they mostly go back in, but they take their sweet time. turkeys don't care that you're tired, don't care that you have other things you want to do. So they'll just kind of slowly get closer and closer to the building as it gets darker and darker. And then if you leave them alone, most will go in, hop on their perches, and then there will be a batch of six or so that we call the door wardens. And they'll sit in the doorway facing out to protect the flock. And I could ideally just let them do that, but, you know, we feel some responsibility, so we herd that six in and close the door. And
well, you're talking investment here, investment. Yes. Oh, good for you. Great. I hear you talk about moving fencing. Just trying to keep my small flock of chickens in a fence. I mean, they have wings. How do you keep turkeys in a fence?
You know, I was prepared for that question because it's a question that we often get. It's like, how do you keep the birds where you want them to be? Let me first start off by saying you don't always win this battle. It's a battle that you sometimes lose. We have had some cases where we came home from delivering other vegetables and we went out to close the door on the turkeys and there were no turkeys in the room and there were no turkeys in the field and it's dark and it's like, where did the turkeys go? For some reason, they decided to get out one day and they were in the middle of the farm on these rocks we have and they're sitting there quietly. And so the net result is we said, well, we found them, but we can't get them to move because it's dark. So we put up an electric fence in the middle of the night with flashlights to protect them overnight. They weren't full grown at that point, so they were a little bit more susceptible to possible predation. And so we actually were putting up an electric fence, setting up the charger, doing all that, and it was pretty dark, and it was starting to rain, and, you know, it's all the things that happen to farmers when you're doing things like this. But typically what happens is they get out, and you notice it soon enough, and the idea is you need to find the leaders.
Ah.
And if you can get the leaders to go where you want them to go, then everybody else tends to follow. And the other trick is you just have to be calm. The moment you start thinking they need to hurry up and go and you want them to go now is the moment they decide to go five different directions because you're excited.
How do you move the leader? Do you put a string around him and tug him, or what do you do?
Well, now, so this is where I told you earlier that I'm sometimes known as the big turkey on the farm. Turkeys do have a pecking order. They do try to establish who is the dominant in the flock. And so one of the things that I often will do when they're very young is I'll establish that I'm the dominant turkey in the flock.
Ooh.
And that doesn't mean they follow me per se, but it does mean that if I hold my arms out, make myself bigger, and sometimes I'll make that puffing, that noise that they do. And that's a thing saying, hey, I'm the biggest and the baddest. You should respect me. And then typically we'll just walk with our arms out and just herd them very slowly. If they start to go to the side, you just stick an arm out that way. They know, and they go, all right, fine. And as long as you move it slowly, you can move the whole flock, get them back into the fencing, fix the fencing, and you're fine again. But you can't get excited, because if you get excited, they're not going to do what you want.
Oh, good. A turkey whisperer. That's what we need. Is there a difference between male and female turkeys? Or
Well, yeah, they look a little different.
Well, no, are they? Do you have both, or what do you raise?
Yeah, we usually just get we just get whatever they send us, which means we're going to get about a 50-50 break on male-female. So the males, for those who are listening that might not know, are typically called Jakes.
Uh-huh.
And the dominant male would be the Tom.
Oh, okay. Tom so is the dominant male. So should we start calling you Tom Fox rather than Rob?
No, I think that probably would only confuse me. So
okay.
Yeah, don't confuse me, because then I don't know what I'm going to do next. It's kind of like turkeys. You need to talk gently, don't move too fast, and then I won't get confused and run everywhere. but yeah, the Tom is the dominant, the Jakes are the rest of the males, and the females are known as Jennies.
Oh, really?
Jeez. Okay.
Yeah. And they are built differently. They are definitely different in that, and you can probably guess why this is the case. The toms typically have longer legs. They typically are a bit more upright. Obviously, they're usually bigger. And the jennies are a little bit shorter legs. You know, they're a little bit rounder in shape than the toms. The toms will have a little bit longer necks, longer legs. And then as far as attitude is concerned, the jennies just roll their eyes when the males try to figure out who the tom is.
Do they fight or squabble, or how do they establish the dominance?
Well, you know, it depends on the flock. We've raised turkeys since 2006 or 7. I don't remember which year we started. So we've seen a lot of flocks. And some flocks are a bit more aggressive than other flocks. And I think it also has to do with the breed you're raising.
Oh, well, that's what I was going to ask you. How do you pick your breed?
Yeah, that's a good question, too. As far as picking the breed, we settled eventually on what's known as the broad-breasted bronze, which might have been the turkey type that you had.
Yeah, they are beautiful.
They are beautiful birds. They look a lot like the wild turkeys you might see in Iowa. But they are a hybrid because they are bred to be, you know, have more breast meat to be bigger.
Uh-huh.
They're grown. But they tend to be a little bit more docile as well than some of the heirloom breeds. If you've got an heirloom breed, they're going to be a bit more aggressive because they're closer to the wild turkeys or a natural bird flock that you'd be looking for. Where establishing a true dominant male is extremely important to the flock. And as you hybridize them for meat, some of that priority gets bred out of them. So they're a little bit less aggressive with each other. But typically what they'll do is you've seen turkeys fan their feathers, which is something that's very beautiful to see. But as they fan their feathers, they will also puff out all the rest of their feathers, so they're made bigger.
They're beautiful. They look, especially the bronze one, the coloring, it looks like, I don't know, when I was a kid, we would have these candles that would show, some pilgrim candles and some turkey candles, you know, the little kind. And the bronze with his tail out looks exactly like the iconic turkey that we were of our childhood kind of thing, right? With the big fan tail, the coloring.
Yeah, the coloring's beautiful, and especially if the sun hits it, you get to see all kinds of colors in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
You'll notice that the wattle, the thing that hangs down from their chin, will get redder and it will droop down further.
I got to say, it is a very weird looking thing that grows on their face, right?
Well, they probably think our noses look kind of funny too. But yeah, about how pretty turkeys really are, you look a little closer and they look like dinosaurs. Yeah, they do. That's fine. That's good. That's good. Great.
So.
True. It's true. And they do sometimes, certain flocks will get aggressive with each other. So you can get some schoolyard scuffles out of them where they will often grab either the wattle or the thing on the top's called a snood. The snood. And they will grab that and hold the other turkey down. That's a fairly common thing to establish.
This is the males, right?
They're the males.
Yeah, it's like having too many roosters in the chicken flock.
It is very much like that. Mm-hmm. It's very much like that.
How long does it take a turkey to mature? Is it just one season, or do they last for years?
Well, to reach maturity, to actually reach sexual maturity, depends somewhat on the breed. When we raise our turkeys, we raise them for a total of 18 weeks.
Oh.
And at that point, they are approaching maturity. They're approaching full size, probably approaching sexual maturity soon thereafter. But that's not too terribly long.
No.
As far as that's concerned. If you're looking at heirloom varieties, they can take a little bit longer. And if you're looking at the turkeys that are hybridized for mass production, those are even shorter for two reasons. One, they want their birds to be smaller. You were mentioning people want smaller birds.
Mm-hmm.
And for two, they're meant to just simply grow meat. They're not meant to move around or do anything else. So essentially, they want to make them more profitable by pumping less food over less time to make more meat. That's what they're breeding for.
Good, good. We are talking to Rob Fox, not Tom Fox. I said turkey slipped there. Rob Fox, about growing turkeys and a lot of things I'm learning here. This is good. And we'll come back after this break. This is KHOI. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking turkey today. That was a tune that it wasn't about turkeys, but the name of it is Magpie. So we are in the bird sort of theme here. That was a tune by the Barn Owl Band called Magpie. We're talking about turkeys.
Okay, this is the point in the show where I do something really special.
Oh, Donna.
I have to do this every year. Okay, turkeys do not go gobble, 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 gobble. They go,
and nobody does it better than Donna.
I learned that from my turkey. So, Rob, your turkeys, you grow them about 4.5 months. Is that right?
18 weeks, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So,
and you've, of course, you time that for the Thanksgiving market, right?
We do time it for the Thanksgiving market, but we also time it for two other things. One thing we're timing for, well, maybe three other things. If I think about it too hard, it'll be 10, but we'll do three. One is, of course, availability of processor. You know, that's something that we actually set at the same time we set trying to get our chicks for that year. Because you want to know, well, okay, I have a processor opening here. Now you count back your 18 weeks and try and get your turklets ordered at that point in time. So that's one thing. Because they're pasture raised, the other thing we're looking at is the quality of pasture. Once we get into October, we start getting cold. The birds are at their biggest, which means they tear the pasture up the most. You have to be aware that your pasture is not going to be able to handle them for an infinite amount of time, especially in the fall. So unless you've got extra space where you can turn them out into a new location, that's a consideration. And then the final thing really has to do with the availability of ourselves. Because as the farmers, we have to be able to market the birds, take them to the processor, take them to be frozen, get them to the individuals who buy them. It's not a small process, and one of the things you might not know, or folks might not know about our farm, is we were also doing vegetables. And so often we're trying to get ourselves past the peak vegetable harvest so that we actually have time to take those darn turkeys in. So typically it would be about October 20 to 30, somewhere in there, that we would have an open spot, that we would get the processor, and that's what we would target, is that period.
Good. What you mentioned, your turkeys are in pasture a lot. Do you plant something specifically for them, or do you have to supplement their feed with something?
Yeah, actually, the feed is actually an important thing that everybody needs to consider if you're raising or you think you want to raise a turkey. Turkeys tend to, if you especially want to raise them up for meat, they need a little bit more protein, especially when they're chicks. So we start them on feed with 27% protein, which is super high.
Oh, yeah. Is that from soy or from what?
Well, it can be multiple things, but soy would be often the highest component for protein in the mix. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we've had mixes with some seaweed or kelp in there, and there's a few other things that can be added. And then you drop it down to, we drop it down to 21%, which is the standard feed mix that you would give to broiler chickens. And we do that on purpose because we've raised broiler chickens too, and we don't want to have a different feed bin for every single flock we have on the farm. So we found some people recommended a higher or a different turkey feed, and we kind of found over time that these turkeys do just fine if the first 4 weeks we have the starter feed with the high protein, and then we just give them the broilers in there. Our birds will range anywhere from 12 pounds when they're processed to 24, typically, is the range we will have. And sometimes we'll have birds as big as 30 pounds.
Poof.
So that happens, and those are the ones typically we will favor for ourselves.
Oh, you like the big
ones?
We
like to cook the big birds, yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
This is an arduous task. So let's say if they're free-ranging, so they're obviously eating stuff in the environment, too. What kind of guesstimate the percentage of the grains that you have to supplement with beyond what they're foraging?
You know, actually, I think about it the other way as a grower. I think about how much feed do they probably need, and then what's in the pasture is supplementing their food. And to be perfectly honest, I could probably give people a formula, give this many pounds of food per bird, blah, 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 blah. But what we do is we actually, because we see these birds every day, we actually adjust daily what they're getting based on how much food is left over at the end of the day. So it's a progression that I've learned now for X number of years, that you start with so much food, you increase it as they grow. When there's leftover food, now you need to make an adjustment. And I can make adjustments, too, because here's a trick with vegetable farming. You're not going to always have vegetables that are perfect that people want to buy. But turkeys don't care that those tomatoes have holes in them. They, in fact, like that. So you can supplement their food with garden produce, with vegetables that we can't sell. So and they love tomatoes.
Oh,
they will chase tomatoes.
Good. All tomato fed turkey. That's a
handy creature. Yeah. I like this. This is good. This is good.
They're probably are they like pigs in that they can kind of eat a lot of different things?
They are pretty good at eating a lot of different things. The funny thing about turkeys, though, and the funny thing about humans, is that I remember turkeys like tomatoes. I remember they like cucumbers and watermelons. But every year it's a new flock, and I forget that they haven't done this before. This particular flock has never done this before. So you throw things out there for them. You spread them out so they have a chance. And the flock will actually circle what you've put in their pasture for them to eat cautiously with the leader. And they'll spiral in towards it, and they'll get real close, and one of them will reach out, and then they won't quite touch it, and they'll all go back to a wider circle. And they'll do that a couple times until somebody finally takes a taste. And then once somebody takes a taste, they're like, oh, that was good. And now it's a free-for-all. They all go after it. But it takes a little bit to teach them that these vegetables are something that, really, you're going to like this watermelon. Really, go ahead and take a taste. They don't listen to us when we tell them, so you just let them figure it out on their own. And eventually that they start come running when they see the guy with the red hat. I usually wear a red hat out on the farm. They see the
That's
red hat
snood,
coming,
huh?
They'll all come barreling towards me. What has he got this time? You know, so.
I can't see him.
They are fun. Although 75 of them would probably be quite a lot to manage. Maybe it's a good thing you didn't grow them this year, because the turkey prices are declining just for this year due to surplus of birds. So it says, according to CNN, the decrease in shelf price for birds coincides with a dramatic 29% slump in the wholesale price for turkeys this October versus a year ago. Of course, that only for consumers, that only comes to a drop in 13%. You know how that works. So the farmers get less, and some of the savings are passed on to the consumers. But for us eaters, the good news is that we won't have to spend quite so much on a bird this year.
At least for the run-of-the-mill commercial turkeys. Some people don't mind paying a little bit more for a humanely raised, organically fed, actually turkeys that have had a life. It sounds like your turkeys have had a life, Rob. I think it's very good.
So how do you usually, do you have a list of people that are like waiting for your turkeys? How do you usually do it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Typically we have what we now call our egg email or egg vegetable email. Mm-hmm. And it's a list of folks who signed up over time and gotten products from us in the past. But then we also get calls from individuals who just hear that we've raised turkeys and they want to know if we have turkeys available. And one of the things that probably people should think about when we're talking about local foods and local poultry is that typically our prices will be set based on our expenses. And those prices do not typically go up and down based on overall market conditions. So even though the overall price is reported to be lower nationally, a local market doesn't depend on the supply-demand factor as much as what did it cost me to do this? And I will simply set a price that covers my expense and pays me something for the labor of going out and being the big turkey, bringing them pounds and pounds of tomatoes that you know, won't be sold otherwise. The work needs to be compensated somehow. So we basically, over the years, we maybe changed the price of our turkeys a total of 3 times, and then we pretty much kept it the same. And one of the things we did do is we recognized that people struggle a little bit with bigger birds, so we actually had graduated pricing, where if you wanted a smaller bird, the price per pound was higher, and if you wanted a bigger bird, the price per pound was lower. So we recognized that and worked with the demand. Over time, people started grabbing the birds that were at least 17 pounds or bigger from us. And the smaller birds would go to folks who had smaller families. We had some older folks who wanted a farm-raised turkey. And so they got the 12, 13, 14, 15-pound birds, the smaller ones that they could handle. But in general, people started realizing that these larger birds in a way are more economical. You get more meat for them. Mm-hmm. The farmer gets a better return for them. And so all in all, it's probably a better bird from that perspective. But I also recognize not everybody's willing to cook the big bird. You sometimes have to have a special pan for it when you get into the 24-pound range.
Yeah, or the proverbial turkey roaster, which every kitchen used to have one. I mean, for years, my mother's had one, and she kept saying, I'm not using it. I should get rid of it. And I kept saying, no, don't get rid of it. I now have the turkey roaster, which is as old as I am.
Working just
it's
fine.
It still roasts turkeys and a lot of other things, too. So,
Rob, you mentioned you cook a big bird. Do you have any special things that you add to the bird or the way to cook it that your family just loves and you do every year?
Actually, the biggest key for us that we learned over time, especially with our pasture-raised birds, is first of all, you know, they're not injected with saline, so you don't have a whole lot of extra liquid in them. Second of all, they've been active, so that means they're not going to have the same kind of fat that some of the birds who've been in confinement do. So they tend to be more lean. And the fat, if you've ever cleaned a turkey or a chicken, you know, sometimes you kind of feel that grease on your hands and it's hard to wash that off. We've noticed that with the extra collagen in our birds, it's easier to wash it off. It doesn't have that same greasy quality to the birds when you work with them. So we typically go by the rule of low and slow. Cook lower temperature, cook a little bit longer. That keeps the moisture in there. It doesn't dry them out trying to cook them too darn fast. And we also make sure to cover the turkey with tin foil. And we found turning the turkey upside down helps a little bit.
I have read that a lot.
I do that too. I that's a good put all that good stuff down in that. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Now I did something last year that I liked. I think I may try it again this year. Where I did a it's not a brine, but it is a pre-salting. So of course you have to have the thawed bird out, and it has to have a space in the refrigerator. But I took a lot of kind of grow, you know, larger salt crystals, and I put them all over the inside cavity, and then I loosened the skin all along the breast and the upper parts of the legs and really spread some salt all inside between the skin and the actual meat and let that sit for about 24 hours. So it was a kind of brining, and it did, I think it tenderized it a little bit more, and it did, you know, you're not injecting any liquid there, but the salt is kind of, I think, bringing out the best in the bird. So I think I'm going to do that again this year. And then, Rob, the other thing I do is I baste with butter. I do cover my turkeys with foil. I think that's the easiest thing. Then you get some steam action in the pan. And then towards the end is when I take the foil off, because you want it to brown. And then I start basting with butter.
That's my butter.
Butter. Butter is better, you know.
I applaud people that cook big turkeys, because I think the best part of turkeys is the leftovers, because I love turkey, everything you can do with it after. So if there's turkey leftover, that is fine with me.
And I love the carcass.
And then there's
Once you've eaten all the meat, or you've separated the meat and put it into the refrigerator to eat later for those turkey sandwiches and the turkey hash and the turkey everything, the carcass, you know, you got to kind of crunch it up a little so it'll all fit in a pot. But making a turkey stock is, I think that's, if you are not using the carcass, you're not honoring this bird properly. There's a lot to do with the carcass.
Turkeys are good things. I want to mention again, this is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more about this fine station and our show at www.khoifm.org. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Donna, you've got a little bit to talk about different kinds of ways people raise turkeys.
Well, yeah, I wanted to ask Rob, for those people that are looking for farm-raised turkeys, do you have any suggestions for how, a less rural person might go about finding who is raising turkeys out in the countryside around Iowa?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a couple ways. I mean, one of which, of course, is, and this is my plug for local foods here, folks.
Mm-hmm.
If you are constantly trying to find ways to support local growers throughout your year, if you're going to farmers markets, you're finding about winter markets that have kind of increased over the last 10 years mm-hmm. in Iowa, then you have a way to find out who is raising what, because usually the local growers know each other. And so if you're looking for a local turkey, go to that farmer's market, go to that harvest market, find one of those growers and ask them the question, because they're often the folks who know from conversation, these folks down the road have raised 12 turkeys and are looking to sell 6 of them, or some other thing like that. That's one of the easiest ways to get yourself into the local food system. But that also preserves your local food system mm-hmm. because you're constantly involved in it and showing need for it. A farmer is going to stop growing turkeys if nobody seems to want them. So keep
letting them know you want them. And that would be
sad. It would be sad, because then you wouldn't have big turkeys like me running around chasing these birds on the farm. Yeah, exactly. There's another place you could go. If you go to practicalfarmers.org, this is Practical Farmers of Iowa's website, and do a search for local foods, you can see at least the farms through PFI have listed what they grow. And there are a number of growers who say that they grow turkeys that are on that list.
That's how I found you to come and do the show. I went, okay, who's growing turkeys? And I did go to the PFI website and start reading through who was growing what. And I said, oh, let's call Rob, because he can speak to this issue.
Very good.
Now,
so those are the probably two things I think people can do that's reasonable. Some communities do have buy fresh, buy local programs still that sometimes will list these things. Some of that landscape has changed over the last 5 or 6 years, but it's still out there. So I think those are three good ways you can try and find a local turkey.
Now, there is one thing I did want to give a shout out to here in Iowa. Most of the, there is Ferndale Market, which raises poultry. It's in southern Minnesota. And while it's not quite the same as going to, they are farmers. They're just a larger scale. So a lot of stores in Iowa are selling Ferndale Market turkeys. And here's what their specifications are. They are free-range turkeys. They are raised without antibiotics. They are given a custom feed. They have humane processing and naturally processed. So these are, you know, these are things that you want to look for in a better bird. So that's an option. I would prefer to have one of Rob's turkeys, but if you fail to find one, you can go to your natural product stores and you can probably find a good Ferndale Market. These are qualities you need to look for in a bird. This is not your typical, let's say Butterball is the brand that people usually get. They're not as cheap as you'll find in the regular supermarket, but I think you get a much better bird.
Right. Right. Also, I want to mention that you do have to think about it. This is really not too early to think about getting a turkey.
Because, oh, no, you should be lining it up now. That's why we're doing the show today. It is time, yeah.
Yes, because, well, you can get one frozen, and heaven knows it takes a long time to thaw it. Not from now until Thanksgiving, but think about that. But also think about availability.
One should thaw it in the refrigerator. Or given the weather we have today, if it's in the, I'd say low 40s, it's okay to thaw it on the back porch. But you gotta watch that your outdoor thawing is in the same range as your refrigerator temperatures.
Yeah, sometimes the back porch is a handy place to kind of be your extra refrigerator, but kind of remember
it could freeze or it could get too warm, so you really have to watch it. So having the space in the refrigerator to let the bird, you know, first it has to thaw, then if you're going to brine it, it's a huge consideration, the logistics of the whole thing.
And don't let any outside animals get into it, even if it's on the back porch.
Oh, yeah, watch out for the dog and the cat, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yes. Well, anything else about turkeys?
I don't know. Rob, you got anything else to tell us that we need to know about turkeys or about Pesticide Action Network?
Oh, I can probably fill a full show on both of those.
Well, we'll call you back again then.
Well, good.
Something people probably need to consider when you're to further plug, especially free range turkeys. I remember growing up and everybody wanted the white meat. And the reason for that was because the dark meat was always so inferior. It was not very good. And of course, I grew up in a family where we got those butterball turkeys that were injected with saline, and they were raised in confinement. So, of course, those birds didn't use their wing muscles or the leg muscles much at all. When you get a free-range bird, the quality of the meat throughout the bird is going to be more consistent. You get more quality meat when you get a free-range bird, a higher percentage of quality meat throughout the bird than you do if you get a confinement bird. So there is a reason. There are a couple reasons why you pay more. One, of course, is the expenses are a little higher, and most of that money does go as a local bird to the farm. But the other is the fact that you really are getting more food per pound than you would if you get yourself one of these confinement birds in a grocery
store. And more flavor per pound, too.
Yeah. And more flavor per pound. I would agree with that. Yeah.
And I'm in the dark, you know, at the dinner table. Oh, I want the thigh. I love the dark meat.
I'm a dark meat person.
Yeah.
So, Rob, you didn't raise turkeys this year. Are you going to do that next year? Are you going to raise turkeys again?
Yeah, we're going to raise turkeys again next year. We kind of missed them this year. Yeah, we kind of missed having them around.
Oh, good.
This year it was a medical thing that we had that we just realized, you know, I don't think we can do that and everything else we're doing. So we just didn't do it this
good,
year.
Good. So,
next year there will be turkeys on the farm.
Good. So again, tell us, when will you be the little ones are not called chicks. They're called something else, aren't they?
Well, you could be correct if you called them chicks, but you also can call them turklets if you want.
Turklets. How nice. When will you be getting your turklets next spring?
Typically, we get them in late June at that point in time. And that's kind of a good time for us because if you get them too early and you get some cooler weather, then that's an issue. You have to either heat the room they're in a bit more to keep them from getting hypothermic. So we like it to be a little bit later. And typically, we process, as I said, late October. And that's partly because that's when we can get the processing date, but we have other reasons for it, too. And usually all of our birds are sold out by the time we get to Halloween.
As they should be.
That's a pretty common thing for us.
Very good. Well, thank you for being with us today, and thanks for all the turkey information. You have made our Thanksgiving richer because we know kind of where all this stuff comes from. Good for you.
And we appreciate the personalities of the birds. It's so lovely to talk with you about how they behave and what kind of characters they are on the farm. So
thank you, Donna.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you for being with us, Rob.
You're welcome. It's an honor to have been here.
Good. Thank you very much. That was Rob Fox from he has a farm up by Tripola, Iowa, And he grows food, not only turkeys, but other stuff too. And we got a lot of good information. So think about, if you're going to get a turkey, think about getting the good ones.
And do it soon.
And do it soon.
Do it this week. Absolutely. Yeah, make a plan. Okay.
Good. I have a little upcoming thing happen here. I want to mention that the Ames Public Library is having another of their book sales, which is always a wonderful thing. I always come away with way too much poundage as far as books are concerned. But library book sale is wonderful. You support the library and read books. What could be better? That is Thursday, November 16th through Sunday, November 19th. So it's always a good time.
And go and vote today.
Yes.
Regardless.
Regardless of what?
Regardless of how you vote, we are very nonpartisan on this show, but it is important to exercise your civic duties.
It is. And I want to mention that we want to support this radio station. The KHOI On Air Fund Drive is coming up. And Donna, tell us about our podcast.
Oh, our podcast, yes. The show, which we are now doing live, is recorded and then it's repeated at 7 o'clock on the 7 o'clock p.m. tonight on the radio. Then it is posted in podcast format for wherever you listen to podcasts. You just put in Donna Lana, which is one word, DonnaLonna, second word, kitchen, and there the content will be. On Thursdays, we put the podcast up.
The new ones up, plus yep. A whole bunch of other ones.
Oh,
yes. If you can't get enough of us, there we are. Yes. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen on this fine radio station. I mentioned, too, that our KHOI community radio is a real good thing that just may want to support. There's a lot of good programming here and a lot of good events that they have here. So go to khoifm.org for more information. Support this fine station. We had music by the Barn Owl Band today. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintos.
Excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.